Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October 19th, the Norris Group proudly presents its fifth annual award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joins Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Foreclosure Radar and Sean O'Toole, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan. Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest. Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander. San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry. Fry Wiles, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. Learn more about the panel and how to attend at isurvivedrealestate.com.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Mark Palem. Mark is a director in the Economic and Strategic Research Group at Fannie Mae. His work focuses on the impacts of trends in the financial services sector, on the economy, and on Fannie Mae. Dr. Palem has a PhD in economics from George Mason University and a BA in international studies from Johns Hopkins University. He lives in Bethesda, Maryland, and he will join us, I believe, on the panel at I Survive Real Estate. Mark, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
You're kind of in the what's next business. That's kind of what I call it. You have to look in the future, I think, and tell people this is what's likely going to be next. What do you look at to kind of give you a blueprint of what you think is coming?
Well, you know, like all economists and particularly those who are interested in forecasting, it's two things. The first thing, which is often the most difficult part, is to try to get as accurate a read as possible on what current conditions are. And then secondly is to get a sense of what consumer and investor attitudes are and expectations are. So really those are the two things that I would focus on and try to keep up to date on.
As an economist, I would think normally you're very concerned about what's going on within our country. Is this one of the few times where you really have to look outside of the borders of our country and be concerned about what's going on over there?
You know, I think that's very much the case. I mean, we're very fortunate that we have over 300 million people in a vigorous and dynamic economy. So often focusing on what's happening in the U.S. is the key. You know, in the recent years, because our growth has been generally weaker than obviously everyone would like, and exports have been a source of strength. Therefore, you know, what's happening in foreign markets is that much more important. And then particularly this year, if you look at what's happening in Europe and the slowdown in China, how that affects our capital markets and interest rates. So we're really having one of those periods where the global economy is having quite a strong effect on both the financial markets and also on the real economy, or at least, you know, output, and whether it be farming for exports or industrial output in terms of, again, exports and competing with imports. So definitely one of those years where you can't just look at the U.S. economy.
You know, if I was in the real estate business and someone told me that, okay, you can expect a credit downgrade for the U.S., I would have been concerned about what the 10-year T-bill would have done, and it didn't do what I would have thought it would have done. It's half of what it was. So why, you know, why are we there? Why do we have, I know that it's gone up to 1.8, it was down to 1.3 something, but anything under 2 is just probably unimaginable. So, you know, how did we end up with these interest rates so low, and what would probably be the event to change that?
Right. Yeah, it's a terrific question. You know, and if I may indulge in personal history, I remember in 1988 when I started working, the 10-year Treasury went above 10%, and I never thought I would see it at below 2%, but We did get below 2%, and in some ways that was just a very unhealthy place, and it still is a very unhealthy place for Treasury rates to be. And I'm not saying that because I don't want the government to be able to borrow at low rates. It's because what it tells us about investors' concern and extreme risk aversion and their fear of putting their money in other bond markets, let alone putting it into the stock market or a venture fund or other places. And interest rates that low typically indicate either the possibility of a downturn or just incredible risk aversion for investors. So it is good to see it come back off the 1.5% and move up a little higher, but in a lot of ways it would be great to see it back over 2%.
Which is a sentence you probably never thought you'd utter in your entire life, back over 2%.
That's right.
And what's interesting, it's really created dislocation. Somebody's got a lot of cash looking for yield, and as I mentioned off air, some of it landed in California real estate because at least they can buy a house free and clear and rent it and get some kind of a yield. That's creating unheard of demand in our marketplace and has really been a game changer. One of the things that isn't too good for interest rates to be where they're at is for the poor guy that saved all his life that has $1 million. If he was counting on some yield on a 10-year T-bill, that's not happening. Do you foresee interest rates being very, very low for another few years just because of what you see probably coming?
Yeah, I mean, the interest rates when you get to the T-bill area, that's also heavily a function of Federal Reserve policy and the Federal Reserve lowering interest rates. And, you're quite accurate that hurts savers and those who are retired on a fixed income, and represents a certain amount, to some extent, a wealth transfer going on between across groups in the society. When we look at the economy and consider what we think the Federal Reserve is likely to do and what is likely to happen with interest rates, we are forecasting that for the next few years, interest rates are likely to remain quite low, especially at the short end, and even the 10-year Treasury rate, looking out to 2014 or even 2015, we're forecasting it will go to 2% and then, maybe 2.5, 2.3 kind of area. For the near future, given the outlook for the economy and the amount of deleveraging and the outlook for global growth, we still think it'll be a historically very low interest rate environment.
There's certainly two camps of very educated people. Some say we can expect a lot of inflation. That 10-year T-bill doesn't tell me that there's much concern about that in the marketplace.
Yeah, currently, that's right. Currently, at least the bond market is not focused on that, and you've had the rush of liquidity. As you may recall, last year there was a concern as to whether in the Fed, brought on further easing of monetary policy because there was a concern of whether we'd actually have deflation.
Exactly.
And have a scenario like Japan had where a debt overhang and continued consumer caution actually led to very weak growth and deflation. So, at this point, the bond market is signaling more concern with deflation and inflation, but that could obviously change.
The fiscal cliff that we've all read about coming in the next year, is that a significant problem that will really end up causing some policy changes, do you think? I don't mean from Fannie Mae, but in other words, from the U.S. government deciding, okay, we really do have to correct our fiscal outlook. Do you think there's going to be significant changes to that?
Sure. That's an issue that has gained more currency and importance during the year, and it makes economic forecasting that much more difficult this year because there's obviously an election and then there's fiscal issues and always difficult to forecast how they'll be resolved and, what compromises will be made in order to get legislation through in life. So, you know, that's obviously a major issue for the economy looking out 6 to 9 months. You know, and there's different estimates of what the impact is of different elements that go into that fiscal cliff. So, you know what, while it's gotten the attention of being one group, it's actually a number of different parts to it, which makes it that much more difficult to forecast which ones might get extended, which might not.
As far as trying to increase revenue, it seems like I would look at real estate as the low-hanging fruit, if you will, the favored investment type. And are you concerned that it's going to have some significant changes tax-wise in the next couple of years?
No, it's really hard for me to comment on that. Yep. It's just so much uncertainty around the budget. You know, I will say that if you step back from the budget and look at it across a number of countries, that, you know, and I think this is why there's been, you know, bipartisan commentary from economists on the fiscal situation, you know, both by former Democrat administration members and congressmen and Republican administration and congressmen. In the long run, we definitely need to get control of the budget, or it's going to add so much to the debt of the country that you get a negative feedback loop. The OECD and Paris has done a lot of research on this, looking at when debt to GDP gets to a certain level, that it just starts to weigh on the economy, and then growth slows down, and then that kind of, you get a negative spiral where your tax revenues are affected, and makes it harder to get out of that debt. So there's no doubt in my mind that something needs to be done, but, you know, it's really hard to tell which promises will get broken first and who's going to pay what.
But, yeah, it looks like there's going to have to be some changes if we are going to still retain, I suppose, fiscal respect. I'm sure other countries are looking on with, come on, guys, you're going to have to go through some pain, but do it sooner than later. As far as the real estate market, we've been through a tough five-year period. Do you feel at this point we're past the bottom?
Well, you know, we're seeing signs of stability, which we're obviously very pleased to see. This year, you know, we're seeing some, if you look at the different price indices, all the different people put them out, including our own, you know, we're seeing indications are that we're hitting a plateau, and things that prices are no longer going down, and in quite a few markets they're starting to go up. So I think we're really at the stage where we're making a transition from a national boom and then bust, to real estate really going back to being a local market and locally determined. And that at the, you know, at the aggregate level, when you aggregate up all those markets, we probably, in terms of prices, have hit some stability and you know, seeing some improvement. You know, real estate is so different than many other assets because it's got such long lead times to build and such long delay times in terms of selling and people's emotions involved and the amount of debt involved, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, you know, my sense would be that we're close to the bottom or around the bottom. You know, we haven't, as an organization, called a bottom. So that doesn't seem wrong to me, the notion that we're in many markets, we're in the recovery phase or a flat phase. The only caution I would put out there would be that this is with unbelievably low interest rates.
Yes.
So, you know, interest rates, for policy reasons and because of the risk aversion we're talking about, you know, we're seeing mortgage rates that are unbelievably low, and we won't truly be out of the crisis until we get back to a point where, you know, where the Fed's balance sheet is back to a more typical size. Interest rates, both in nominal terms and also in, you know, inflation-adjusted terms, are back to something that's a little bit more of a, you know, normal level, and then see house prices and a housing market that can handle, you know, can handle itself and be healthy without the support of extremely low interest rates.
And that's what's interesting when you say, you know, we see signs of stability, and then, however, there's some amazing things occurring to allow that to occur. And one of them, I think, is the inventory that Fannie Mae and probably all lenders actually have right now is less by quite a bit than it was at the peak. Is that correct, as far as lender-owned inventory?
No, overall, inventories of if you look at severely delinquent loans.
Not delinquent, but actual owned by the REOs.
REOs. And going into REO, you're seeing those numbers starting to come down, as people have been selling. And frankly, they've come down for a number of reasons, one of which is alternative disposition. I think, a lot of lenders and us included have gotten better at using short sales and working with our servicers to use also modifications and, other ways to deal with delinquent loans. So I think both of those together are helping to reduce that inventory. On the flip side, you're seeing, unemployment's not getting worse, it's getting better. So, that helps on the roll rate into the, 30 to 60-day delinquent. If unemployment were at 12% instead of 8, it would obviously we'd be in a much worse situation.
I realize the REO inventory is down quite a bit, but also serious delinquencies are down too?
Yeah, they've come down too.
Okay. The concept of shadow inventory, what do you have a definition of what that includes?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't have a strongly held view one way or the other. I like to think of it with a couple of elements, which is to look at, the 90-day plus delinquent and see what that pipeline is. And obviously not everything that's 90-day delinquent is going to be end up as a short sale or an REO. And then secondly, look at data from, the Census Bureau that looks at houses held off the market and, being held off for other reasons. So there's definitely room for reasonable disagreement about exactly what those numbers are, but that's what I focus on.
It seems like that the potential for a lot more inventory to show up is there. And I think I'm an investor of property, and I look over my shoulder and I see all the foreclosure numbers coming down. But I look at the numbers of people, let's say loan modifications. Something like half of the loan modifications that were approved ended up defaulting again. But very, very few percentage of that pile have ever been resolved. For instance, they haven't been foreclosed on. And is it really now the emphasis to do a short sale for all of those properties or to attempt even another loan modification rather than foreclose?
I would say there isn't really sort of one intent. And from talking to my colleagues who, work in this area, it really is a loan-by-loan decision, and, we implement programs. A short sale or a modification is better for us and better for the borrower. So, we have some alignment of interest there in the sense that if you go through foreclosure, that costs money that, is basically a loss to the two parties. You've got value that's being used up there.
Mm-hmm.
And a property sitting vacant is more likely to be vandalized and to lose its value, too. So, we really do strive to, as much as possible, come up with some alternative solution because it is now economic, self-interest. It's
okay.
Not.
Okay.
And good public policy, obviously, too.
Okay. Yeah, it just so happens they align. Also, when you have a short sale on your credit record, that's less damaging. And is that true that you'll be able to obtain a loan earlier than if you had a foreclosure?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Okay.
You're in a much better position in the long run by having that.
We had just briefly mentioned, and I forget if it was on air or off air, but we talk about some large groups of money have shown up in California to buy property. And Fannie Mae has a couple of programs. One is kind of an experiment. Maybe I'm wrong on the number, but something like 2,500 houses in a bulk sale. Is that approximately right? And is that sort of just being tested, or is that the way of the future for some of the inventory?
You know, I know that you may have seen that our regulator in the spring put out a scorecard for us that was to help to guide our, you know, strategy and priorities for the year. And among those items was to come up with a pilot program and do that kind of thing. I haven't been involved with that personally, so I don't really feel comfortable talking about it too much. I know that we've put out press releases and numbers on that, and my understanding is we've a program going on, and I think FHFA has also on its website put out some more information about what they're going to doing.
Okay.
What we're doing in that area.
Let's go back to the economic outlook. As far as a prognosticator, what would you like to see? And you could then get your arms around and say, okay, this is a real recovery. We are now on our way to a very positive future. What would that be?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's pretty basic but very important things. If I look at the unemployment rate, and I look at the unemployment rate by education,
mm-hmm.
I had a dramatic increase in unemployment for people across all levels, and particularly for people without a high school degree. You know, if I look at the civilian labor force and the participation rate is still very low. We haven't seen an expansion. So to me, really, the labor market at the end of the day tells you a lot about how the economy is doing. And in my mind, you know, the goal of the, to the extent there is a goal, but, you know, from the public policy point of view, creating jobs and incomes is the primary role of the economy, so that people can support themselves and get on with their lives.
In an area where I live, let's say Riverside County, California, the unemployment's pretty high and really dependent upon the construction business to improve. And construction is having a hard time wanting to get off of the floor because it's not profitable to build yet. So all the policies that are dealing with the real estate to support the price as far as stop it going down and firming it up and toward head in another direction will ultimately probably prove to be a positive for construction. But I don't see how you solve unemployment in California without construction.
You know, I'm no doubt that construction is part of the solution. You know, and we're seeing some improvement in construction. We're seeing, you know, an increase in housing starts this year, but obviously that's off a very low base.
Yeah, and it's also mostly apartments, which is still, it counts.
That's right. It's heavily weighted towards apartments, you know, and historically, you know, the multifamily sector has been doing very well. And you know, over time, as we work through the inventory, and as you were alluding to, a lot of the inventory is being picked up by investors. And as we continue, you know, the financial services community to get better at working through the inventory of delinquent loans and alternative dispositions, then, you know, over time, as labor markets improve, we should see a pickup in construction.
Mark, we've run out of time right now. I really enjoyed our interview, and I'm very excited that you're part of our panel. This has been Mark Palem, Director of Economics for Fannie Mae. Mark, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Caldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Elite Auctions, FIBI for Home Investors by Investors, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Incorporated, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Board of Realtors, Stars Photography, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Tony Alvarez, Weston South Coast Plaza. See isurvivedrealestate.com for more on the event and all of the I Survived Real Estate sponsors.